If you're in the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace where each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. If you're in the market, use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting the NFL playoffs, buckle up. Betting football's hard enough as it is. We're doing the research for you. So listen to Cash the Ticket with Mike Valeni and I. We'll be dropping new episodes for every single playoff game. And that's going to be storylines leading into it, so some good football stuff, but also the betting nuggets you're looking for. Sides, totals, trends, player props, throw those in there too. Pre-game and post-game, we're going to be all over the postseason. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Never knew they made a coin with the guy who killed Caesar on the coin.
Hey, you know, there's a lot of paths to fame.
That coin, featuring a depiction of the Roman senator Marcus Junius Brutus, as in Et tu, Brute, it sold at auction in December for just over $2 million. Now, that's a lot of money, but this is one of just 17 known coins of this type.
So you don't think that price tag is just due to inflation after 2,000 years?
I don't know. It's hard to calculate. I think ancient Rome would probably be on the euro by now, so who knows?
Well, that coin was a piece of gold currency used in Rome the last century BCE and was likely issued 1 or 2 years after Caesar's murder. Academics say the coin's run was short. Brutus eventually went into exile and later died in a battle in Greece in 42 BCE.
It got me to thinking, you know, 2,000 years from now, if any of our coins survive, are people going to look at them and think, who is that guy?
Yeah, there's a reason that the most successful and famous presidents and accomplished leaders are the ones who are chosen to be on the money. The over time, George Washington and Abraham Lincoln have secured their place in history, and the fact that their faces are on the money is only further proof that they were the great public figures of their era.
But we're not here today to debate why historical figures are on our money, but what people might think if they were to find a penny with Lincoln's bust on it in 2,000 years. We love Washington and the dollar, but the odds of a piece of paper existing intact in 20 centuries is probably pretty slim.
I'd say so. That is one of our producers, Chris Blake. I'm Mike Rogers. This week on Something Offbeat, I spoke with Aaron Klein. He's a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution about the future of currency. You know, I guess a better question might be, will we even have money in 2,000 years?
Humanity has required money for a variety of reasons. And when you think about what money is a system of debits and credits that are interoperable between different people. And I think as long as we have trade and commerce, we'll have a system of money. It may look and feel very different than where we are now. Right now, I think we're at a bit of a transitional point as physical currency is falling and electronic record keeping is growing. But I think money is a core part of humanity, as much as I like to believe in the Gene Roddenberry's alternative Star Trek universe of everybody has everything they could want, so there's no reason to have money. You'll still find money pop up.
Will it be physical currency, though?
I think there's always going to be a need for physical currency because of the way it interacts and settles. But I think the vast majority of money has moved to an electronic state and will probably remain there for a long time.
You have been an advocate for, and this is near and dear to my heart because I am 100% on board with you here, about some changes to our system of currency, that doing away with some coins and rounding up, rounding down, things like that. What would you like to see?
So, look, first of all, it costs 3 cents to make a penny. And about 70% of our pennies are stored in jars. I mean, people are throwing away pennies because they've lost value to them. We used to make half cents in America in the 19th century. We don't make them anymore. We have to stop producing new pennies. That doesn't mean eliminating the penny. We have billions of pennies we've made over the years that, as I said, sit around in jars. They can continue to circulate. Two, we're the last country that is making paper dollar notes. Why? Paper doesn't last long. It's expensive to make. You have to put toxic ink in order to protect against counterfeiting, we need to move to dollar coins. You go to Europe, England, Canada, Japan, you can't find any paper currency below a 5, in some places below a 10. By my estimate, it would save billions of dollars of taxpayer money to shift from paper dollar notes to coins, which, as you point out, can last thousands of years in some instances. Those simple reforms could save the American taxpayer billions of dollars and make our society much more efficient.
Mike, in the time I've worked with you on this podcast or your radio show or just talking in the newsroom, abolishing the penny and maybe the nickel might be the subject I've heard you get on your soapbox about more than anything. Why?
I've got strong opinions. I don't know what to tell you. It actually is less of an issue for me now since we aren't using cash as much anymore, but many people still do. It's not completely obsolete yet.
How'd this currency become such a fascination for you?
Actually, I can tell you, it goes back to a trip I took to Australia in 1996. Now, they had already done away with their penny and their nickel. They were rounding up and down to the nearest 10. They didn't have dollar bills or $2 bills. They had coins for those. I remember, and I just thought in spending money over there, this just really makes a lot of sense. It's such a waste what we do. Pennies cost more to make than they're worth. Same with nickels. And you got these worthless coins, pennies for sure. No one ever uses them anymore. And like I said, our ability to spend digitally, it's kind of only helped my argument. We got to shake things up.
If you wrote a couple think pieces back then, you could have been one of the leaders of this movement.
That's right. I'd be the one being interviewed.
Exactly.
Look, the fundamental demand for coinage is falling as we move more and more to electronic payments for low dollar things. Think about parking meters, for example, where you now pay on apps. Part of the reason that process needs to be accelerated and not fought against. And one of the things that slows that down are the high transaction fees that are charged for small transactions over debit or credit cards. When we built credit and debit card systems, we put, you know, a quarter or 50 cents just per swipe under the belief that nobody would charge $1.26 on their credit card, right? But we've now moved because of technology, because of smartphones, and to some degree because of COVID, we've moved into a very different system of how we transact money. But we haven't reformed the infrastructure underneath. So there's all these inefficiencies. We haven't reformed the infrastructure underneath our payment system, which is creating tons of inefficiencies. It's one of the reasons why when you go to a little store, you'll see no cards for payments under $5. Mm-hmm. I did research showing millions of dollars lost by public transit agencies all across the country trying to process these small little transactions on debit cards every time you ride the bus. They can cost 25 or 50 cents. I found transit agencies where 10% of their fare box revenue is lost into swipe fee. My oldest friend owns a coffee shop in our hometown in Maryland. And he told me one year he paid more in swipe fees than he did for coffee.
That's incredible.
So when you look at what it costs to run a coffee shop, it costs him more in credit card processing fees than it did for the coffee beans. And by the way, you're kidding yourself if you think Starbucks is paying the same rate that Bump and Grind Coffee is paying in Silver Spring, Maryland. It's a huge competitive disadvantage for small businesses.
Klein is one of the nation's foremost experts on financial regulatory reform, and we spoke last Monday.
I just got asked to testify before Congress on Wednesday.
Oh, really? On what?
Debanking.
How does that happen? Do they just knock on your door? Do they text you? Do they send you a note?
In terms of Congress, you talk to the staff. I worked on the staff of the Senate Banking Committee for 8.5 years. And so it's kind of an honor and a privilege to go back to basically my old office.
Next, we'll hear from Mr. Aaron Klein, senior fellow at Brookings Institution. You are now recognized.
Thank you, Chairman Scott, Ranking Member Warren, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on the pernicious consequences of debanking in America. All of the views I offer here today are my own. 10% of American households are currently unbanked or were unbanked at some point within the last year. Not having a bank account adds significant costs, makes people less healthy, and makes it impossible to fully participate in America's increasingly digital economy. People are debanked.
Klein then went on to explain how he feels the banking system leaves out some lower income Americans.
In America, about 5.6 million households don't have access to a bank account. And when you ask them why, it's because basic banking is too expensive. You have account minimum, you know, free checking is free if you always have $1,000 in your bank account. And if not, if you're working paycheck to paycheck, it can be over $100 a year just to have a checking account. Then you get these surprise overdraft fees, which are often $35 penalty fees. Sometimes because the money was in your account, it just hadn't gone through the system. Friday was January 31st. Saturday was February 1st. If you got paid and a check on Friday on a second job you did in order to make your month payment on the 1st and you deposited it, it wouldn't have been available to you when your debits come out on the 1st of the month. That's nuts to me, man. How is it that Amazon can get anything to your door faster than a bank can process your check? They sit on your money a couple days because the Federal Reserve allows them to.
All right, and I'm glad you brought up the Fed, because I'm curious about them. How do you feel they would embrace any of these changes, or would they? Would they resist them?
They have fought. And let me tell you the craziest thing. In the U.S., coins are profitable for the U.S. Mint, which go to the Treasury. Paper currency is profitable for the Federal Reserve. What we call money in paper form are actually Federal Reserve notes. I think it's only us and either Argentina or Kenya that splits our coinage between coins going to the Treasury and paper notes going to the central bank. And so the Fed has resisted moving to dollar coins from dollar notes because they simply make money on the paper and they don't on the coin, even though it's one government and it's one taxpayer and all the Fed's profits go back to the taxpayer. They want a big budget to be able to skim off the top.
Given this resistance to change then, because I was going to ask you, what's our money going to look like in 50 years? But it sounds like you're saying there might not be too many differences.
Well, look, was our money that different 50 years ago?
You're right.
I mean, unfortunately not. Even though the value of things has changed, we're still one of the last countries on earth making money the same way we did 50 years ago. Look, people are changing how they use money. You go all sorts of places now and it's electronic money only. And this is why lowering the cost of accessing basic banking has become so important, because you can't pay for Uber in cash. Now you can't even buy a hot dog at a baseball game some places in cash.
Right.
As society moves cashless, keeping people out of the banking system and out of access to electronic money becomes harder and harder for them. And as a society, we need to make improve. I'm an optimist. I believe that in 50 years, we're going to have a much better, more inclusive, cheaper, faster financial system. I believe we're going to have dollar coins. I think we're going to have stop making pennies. And I think people are going to have access to high quality, low cost bank accounts that give them access to electronic money. And the one area where I'm a little less optimistic is that we're going to make life better and fairer for small businesses.
Mike, how often, if ever, do you use cash anymore?
Hold on. I'm going to reach over, check my wallet. I have $1, $1 bill in my wallet, and I have zero change right now. So the answer is not very often anymore. How about you?
Well, we even got the sound effect of pulling the dollar out of your wallet. I like that.
But, I didn't fake it either. That was a real dollar.
But for me, I'd say almost never. If I have it, it's usually because, you know, you split something and for some reason someone hands you a $20 bill instead of Venmo. And if I do use it, I'm probably most likely to use it in a place where totals are relatively low, like if you're just getting a beer or a coffee at a bar or a coffee shop. But I think if I lived in a major walking city, I could see myself using a little bit more for small things at places like corner stores.
I know. I've thought that too. But, you know, with me, at this point, it really doesn't matter whether I'm driving or walking or how I'm getting around. I'll use that card. I'll use that debit card on things that are like under a dollar. I have many times. The stores probably hate me for doing that. But it's just cash is, I don't know. In my world, it's become kind of obsolete.
Yeah, you just walk into a convenience store for a bottle of water that costs $2 and you still put it on the card.
Exactly. All right, now let's wrap things up with Aaron. He buried the lead on me, actually. At the end of our conversation, he ran to another room to grab a pair of cufflinks he has that are made from two real coins from the Roman Empire.
I wear them often when I give lectures on this topic.
Okay, well, let me see. Who's on the coin?
So I should know the answer to that.
It's not Brutus, is it?
No. I think she got these in Jordan, but I don't quote me on that.
Cleopatra and Mark Antony cufflinks?
It's fascinating to think that once upon a time, this piece of metal was a store of value being traded for salt or, right? But now these are just decorative cufflinks. Could there be a moment in history where our coins become somebody else's decoration? Absolutely.
That is really cool. That is really, really cool. Actual coin from the Roman Empire.
I'm not usually a prop comic.
I'm Mike Rogers. Say thanks so much for listening to Something Offbeat. This episode written and produced by Lauren Berry and Chris Blake. Audio editing by Chris Blake. Original music by Myron Kaplan. And to keep listening, please subscribe to us on the Odyssey app, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have your own offbeat story and you think we should cover, we'd like to know about it. You can send it to us at somethingoffbeat@odacy.com.